morning, good afternoon, good noontime, good noon 30, good evening, good night, whatever time of day it is. I want you to know that I'm Lynn Ferguson and I approve this message. I'm Lynn Ferguson, also known as Lynn Tennyson, your host here on the show, Lynn's Vince. It's a podcast dedicated to Black life in America and all over the world in music. So today I want to discuss my recent acceptance into a prestigious college, university, and the experience I've had since starting. Want to know more? Let me just sit back, relax, grab a snack, and let's jump in. Lynn's Vince. So as I mentioned before, I am a St. Louis University student as of this year, this semester, this spring semester in 2023. I am a pre-law student and a criminal justice major. My major, I have an AN. I have A's and B's in the rest of my classes, nothing else. I won't say nothing else. There is one class that I don't have an A or a B in, and it is unfortunately one I'm most likely going to have to drop with a W this semester. And I'm learning more about what that means, but basically, to my understanding, it basically means nothing. It just is a way for you to not have a negative reflection on your report or your record of you failing a class or whatever the case may be. And that actually brings me to why I am presenting this episode today. So this episode is about my experience at SLU thus far, and the hazing, the discrimination, the racism, everything that I've experienced, the intersectionality the intersectionality of all of the different marginalized communities within which I fit, and how that oppresses me even further, or at least it allows for people to oppress me even further because people have their biases. But being a Black transgender woman on a campus that is, you know, mostly white, it's not cute. It's not even cute. Like, every day is hell. When I first got here, I faced a noise complaint from the RA on my floor. And the RA is the residential advisor or assistant or whoever, and aide or whatever, and he or she maintains the order on their floor, particular floor of the dorm hall. So there are multiple floors in each dorm hall, and my dorm room is like a 2x4 right next to the RA's dorm room. And he's a sophomore. He's a white guy, blonde hair, blue eyes. I don't recall what his eye color is for real, but I'm pretty sure it's blue. Stereotypical, you know, top class citizen based on race alone and aesthetics alone in the United States of America and really globally. And he reported me. He did not come to me. He did not say anything to me about his personal complaint about my noise that apparently occurred February 5th of this year. He went straight to formally complaining about me up the chain. So it, long story short, resulted in a hearing, which resulted in me receiving an official misconduct warning on my record. So already within the first week or so of me being here, I'm already receiving misconduct warnings that go on my record. You know what I'm saying? So I'm currently in the process of, after much self-advocacy and a great fight, I have secured a new hearing, and I'm also conferring with people who, a kind of team of people I'm making with the help of other people at the university, of people within the university, and who could better advocate for me and help me to get through this systemic oppression. And it's just crazy, you know? I just left a class 5-10 minutes ago that was, it's a Cura Personalis class, and but it's just like it sounds. It's basically like a cure of personality, you know, basically like it's an identity class, a self-identity class, and like social identity class, and it basically is meant to make us more well-rounded individuals who are more inclusive and less discriminatory, and et cetera, et cetera. And the teacher asked us after showing us a video about intersectionality, and I did intersectionality workshops, anti-racism workshops all throughout St. Louis. You know, I've done activist work, all that good stuff. If you've been following me for a minute, you know. So, you know, I already knew about intersectionality, but the video was very, you know, interesting and very nice to watch. And afterward, he asked us a question about how intersectionality has basically affected us in the school, or how we see it at play at SLU, St. Louis University. Spoke up and said, the first thing she said is that she is consistently not sat next to if she is the only Black person in the class. So the way she worded it was is basically if she's the only Black person in the class, no one wants to sit next to her. And after she finished saying what she was saying about that, I said, oh, you too? And she was like, yeah. And then the other Black woman, the only other Black person in the room, attested as well to it and said, yep, same here. And it was just crazy it really makes me like really sad, mad, everything. To just hear, you know, I'm a strong person and I don't like that I have to go through what I have to go through, and I complain about it a lot with the very few people who are in my life who I have to support me. But hearing about other people going through it, like at the very same university I'm going to, in this very same, going through similar situations, almost exactly the same, like it's crazy. Only thing that makes it different is the fact that I'm a Black transgender woman. So people don't just not want to sit next to me and go out of their way to sit around me. They also move their desks when they do take their seats as far away from me as possible. Now, this is only happening in one class, but like it's greatly affected my ability to function in the class, which has affected my grade, which is why I have a B instead of an A in that class. I just don't feel it. I feel, you know, neglected by the professor because I've complained to him about these interactions with the students and he's done nothing. I feel abandoned by the university if they were ever here in the first place. I feel devalued as a peer, you know, especially as an elder. You know, I wouldn't consider myself technically an elder to these, you know, 20 and these teen and 20-year-olds, 20-something-year-olds, but I'm substantially older, you know? I'm anywhere from like 4 to 8 years older than all of these people. So them attacking me with these ridiculous, you know, situations. Like, I got this one girl who came up to me, she's Latina, and, you know, I've been open about me being trans ever since I came out on my podcast here last year. So it is known at the school, and, you know, not by everybody in my league, you know, certain people know. And this girl in particular knew, and she came over to basically try to test my gangster, test my femininity. So she sits next to me, like munching on some like chips obnoxiously, like smacking, showing her food, you know, speaking loud, and, you know, like she's, you know, showing how drunk she was one night when I was outside smoking and at the dorm. And her friends, her two white girlfriends, you know, were walking with her, and she separated from them when they were about to turn the corner and leave my sight. And she came to me, sat down at the table, gave all this disgusting, you know, unsophisticated behavior. And then when I looked at her like she was crazy, she got it together real quick and realized that she needed to come a little bit more poised to be in my presence. And so as she's sitting, you know, next to me, she like, you know, gets herself together, and she offers me some of the chips that she was just showing me as they were, you know, being chewed upon in her mouth. I turn her down, and she starts making conversation. Long story short, at one point her white friends come over and they're like, "What are you doing?" And they apologize to me. The one who's the roommate to me is like, "I'm sorry, I'm so sorry about her." And that made it very apparent to me that they were trying to stop her from coming over here. It was one of two things. One, they were either trying to stop her from coming over here because they knew what she was on, or two, they just felt like, and or two, they felt like they had to apologize for their friend who is not white because she's acting, you know, obnoxious, and, you know, they're basically, you know, almost like her keepers. Whatever the situation was, she, you know, refuses to go when they're kind of coaxing her to get up and go with them. So they sit down at the table and we all end up talking. And at one point, after we're having a pretty decent conversation, she brings up transgender women, allegedly trying to force cisgender women to call themselves chest feeders and things like that because they don't want some kind of bullshit about transgender women wanting to take away the femininity of cisgender women. This same narrative that has spurred a lot of this legislation against the community. And I don't know if you all know how deep this gets, but the legislation that they're passing, one of the bills is that's being proposed here in Missouri and across the country, is a bill that is designed to make it impossible, basically, for not only drag queens and people who, you know, may not be necessarily transgender, but don't fit the gender norms, to perform at these places and do drag shows. But it's also affecting women like me. I am a transgender singer who sings in every single genre and 7 different languages so far. And I rap in multiple languages. And if this bill were to pass, it basically, the way it's worded is, any person who is gender non-conforming, basically, so they don't conform with the gender that they were assigned allegedly at birth, is unable to perform, whether that's singing, whatever kind of shows, unable to perform in entertainment unless at an establishment, unless it's at an establishment that is, well, unable to perform, period, unless it's at an establishment that is, that has its sex work license, basically, adult work license. So this is the type of shit that leads, and it's just so funny because it's like, this is the type of people wonder why so many transgender women are sex workers. This is why. It's already been hard for you if you're not a passing, if you're not a passing transgender woman, it's already been hard for you to get a job, maintain a job, whatever the case is, because people don't want to hire you and they don't want to see you in the workplace. And even when you do pass, you've got legal name issues if you're, you know, still going through that. You got gender identity or gender marker issues if you're still going through that. You've got, then even if everything is taken care of, you still have to deal with the discrimination that you witness and be silent about it because you don't want to give away your tea. Then there are those cases where people just know, because some people can't clock your tea, especially when you're a person who can be easily Googled. And, you know, then the problems ensue. You got women who are cisgender, who are trying to make you look bad or trying to get you to, you know, fuck up, trip up. You got dudes out here trying to do the same thing, mostly dudes in your race, black dudes. You've got everybody against you. Your black community is against you. The white community is against you. Anti-LGBTQI people are against you, who have no race issues. It's just crazy. So now they want to implement a bill that is going to ban people like me from being able to make a living on our talents. So they're literally banning the ability for transgender women to be able to share their talents with the world. So I need you all to understand this. That would mean that even if I went to church, it would be a problem if I was singing in the choir. That means that I can't sing anywhere, even on the street, because it's considered sex work underneath the guidelines of and the dictators are the dictations of this bill. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. And, you know, it's just crazy because here I am at this university experiencing hazing, discrimination. I was hit by a car of a student or a teacher here who was pulling out of this new parking lot. No one's done anything about that. I was told when I first got here, and I went to go talk to the BSP worker, Billiken Success Program worker, about, you know, trouble I was having with my math teacher, who is a black man, or at least my math teacher was a black man, now it's a white woman. And I don't know what his problem was with me, I can speculate, but every time I asked a question, he was very dismissive. He made it seem like I was asking the dumbest questions. It made me intimidated from asking questions. He wouldn't help me when I asked, you know, inquiries about what was going on in class, or he'd make a big deal about it. He tried to attack me in front of class several times. in front of all the other students. And even other students came to me and told me that, yeah, no, you're not crazy. He's been focusing on you negatively. So I had to transfer out of his class after the point that you really could even transfer. And in late February somewhere, I transferred to this white woman's class. And she's very nice. She reminds me a lot of Miss Frizzle with the way she dresses and her eccentric personality. But she's light years, leagues ahead of where my last professor was in the class. So her class is already leagues ahead when I started. I had to play a game of catch up that has never really ended. And now I have, and the test scores were horrible. My homework scores are great, but my test scores are horrible because she keeps bringing up these pop quizzes and practice tests, and I don't know the material because I'm still behind. Trying to catch up, going to tutoring 3+ times a week. So much so that I've almost maxed out the amount of extra credit points you get for going to tutoring. Which is nice. And I'm still looking at an 85%, if we just look at my homework in one quiz. And then if we add in the last few other quizzes and that that test right before spring break, it drops me down to an F. So I'm getting A's and B's and everything else except math. The same class, coincidentally, that I had to transfer between in the middle of the year almost and play catch up with after being discriminated against and hazed by a professor, my initial math professor. But before I switched classes, I spoke with, within my first or second week, a person in the BSP office. You know, it's the success program, so like you would think that, you know, you go here and they help you be more successful at the university. Well, no, that's not really what happened. What happened is the guy kept harping on how much in loans I was taking out for this, I would have to take out for the school. And how we were looking at this much amount of money after however many years, and that's just not gonna work, and that's too expensive, and how are you gonna pay that? And you should just go to a community college because of your class and status. That's what this man said to me. That because I'm a black transgender, because I'm a black lower class woman, I should just go to community college because it would be cheaper and better for me than going to a school that I've been accepted in that has extensive opportunities community colleges couldn't even dream of. It's ridiculous. I've reached out to DICE, the Diversity and Equity Inclusion Program here on campus, no response. Come to find out, I know someone. I know the person who is one of the highest people up over the DICE program from years ago when, we don't have a good history. We were friends for years when I was a teenager. And then they ended up sabotaging me. Like, it was one of those racist, like, I'm calling the police on a black person situation and lying about this bitch. And nothing happened to me, you know, because I didn't do anything. But, like, I won't say nothing happened to me because emotionally and communally, I was fucked up at that point. Because they were a person, they go by they and them pronouns. They are a person who was and possibly still is very prominent in the LGBTQI community. So, rumors were spreading about me and this bullshit that they accused me of. It's all kinds of shit. It's just a horrible situation. And this person is the one who is supposed to be leading diversity and equity inclusion. A white person, mind you, who did this to me. But yeah, diversity and equity inclusion never responded to me until I got higher up people to reach out to them as well. The BSA, the Black Student Alliance, never responded to me. And it's crazy because they responded to my initial email about, wanting to be a part of the BSA. But after I sent them that email about what I was going through and the, discrimination that I was enduring that led to me being, given a misconduct warning on my record within such a short amount of time with the university, they never responded. I even sent my I CC'd the student president who just won his election and was reelected. And he, a black man, asked me to CC him on an email after I asked him, told him about some of the issues I was going through and how I reached out to DICE. They didn't do anything. And he has yet to respond to anything. So it's just crazy because it's like, we've got these things. This is the reason that I'm glad that they brought up intersectionality, because we've got these things in place. The BSA for Black people, the Diversity and Equity Inclusion program. But when you actually need them to work for you, where are they? You know what I'm saying? In the meantime, in all the time that it took them to never respond to me, or to just respond to me months later, I've already suffered. My records already suffered. So it's like, you all could have helped me fight this before a decision was made, because I contacted you in ample time with, leaving you ample time to do so. But this is where we are. It's just ridiculous. It's crazy when I think about the same class I learned in this class a lot about the really a little in comparison to the actual history, extensive history. But I learned a lot about how Black people who were enslaved built this school, St. Louis University, and how they were abused. They were kept in captivity, even beyond legal reasoning. Not that there should have ever been a law that permitted that. Their rights were violated. They were in horrible conditions, living in, horrible shacks on campus or off campus. It's just horrible to think of how much we have built this country and put the work in. And they still find ways to sit here and justify excluding us from situations. We wonder why Black people don't go and get an education in the second and third. But it is not lost on me what I endured in high school. It's not lost on me what I endured before I transitioned in elementary school. Just being perceived as a Black kid. And it's always been the same. Disciplinary action because you are perceived as a threat, as a Black student. Even though you're excelling, even though you're acing spelling bees and representing your school, they don't even want you to represent. They want to get the runner-up. When I went to Imagine Academy of Environmental Science and Math, they didn't even want me to represent when I won the spelling bee. I won as first place. I won the class spelling bee, the grade spelling bee against all of the other classes in my grade. And then I won the school spelling bee. I've been doing spelling bees since I was going to Cathedral Basilica in elementary school. And I started there at fourth grade. You know, I think fifth grade was my first spelling bee. Might have been fourth grade, actually. And that was what triggered my first interest, because I got out and I was upset and I was like, wait, this is cool. I love spelling. Went on to regionals just a couple years later, a few years later. What, 3 years, 4 years later in eighth grade? But they wanted Patricia, a girl who was the second place winner. They wanted her to represent the school instead of me. And I had to fight for my right to go to be there. The only reason that I was able to represent is because Pat never showed up. She didn't want to do it in the first place. She's one of those kids who's really smart but didn't want to show it. And you know, for personal reasons. But I don't know what she was going through, but I'm sure she had her reasons. But it's just crazy to think about the fact that this school had segregated chapels, churches. I grew up going to St. Elizabeth, my grandmother's church, and my grandfather's church. My grandfather was a Knight of Peter Claver in St. Louis, within the St. Elizabeth Archdiocese, church. And the St. Louis Archdiocese, I forget what it's called in particular, but I was raised Catholic. I went to several Catholic elementary schools and am now in a Jesuit college, a Catholic Jesuit college. And I went to Cathedral Basilica for Mass multiple times a week. You know, was just like an Orthodox Catholic child for a while. Mind you, this was after Lutheranism, which was after baptism. But, you know, that's a whole nother chestnut. But my grandmother was a lady of Peter Claver and still is. It's funny because they actually just denied me a scholarship for Peter Claver, which is kind of crazy to me because I'm just like, it didn't allow me to inform them in any of the sections where that my, you know, my connection to Peter Claver, the Knights of Peter Claver and the ladies. So that did upset me. But it's just crazy to think that a church of the same name, St. Elizabeth, existed in St. Louis, and it was specifically a colored church built by the same enslaved people of St. Louis University, built by St. Louis University, as they want to put it. And, you know, so that they could have a place to worship, because apparently they weren't allowed in the same house of the Lord of white people. Isn't it crazy? Like, how can you... It's just so crazy how we see certain people as so holier than thou. But they deliberately kept us out of their churches. How do you keep someone out of the house of the Lord? Like, it's already fucked up to call yourself Christian and you're, you know, violating people's rights and enslaving people. But you won't even let them go to church with you? That's fucked up. I don't see how the Lord would deem that appropriate. And so many people think that they're going to be seeing their ancestors in heaven. And it's like, your ancestors don't exist in heaven. A lot of people's ancestors do not exist in heaven. There's not one of them up there. They be looking up at people looking down on them. It's not the people they think. It reminds me of this dream that this white dude had that he put out on YouTube. And I don't know what you have to do to look it up, but just look up like white dude dream about black aliens or black people, whatever. But several people had dreams like this. Several white people made videos like this. One of them was Latino, I believe. And this white guy had a dream that he woke up in the dream in heaven, basically, what looked like heaven. But he couldn't make a lot of stuff out. And he was like looking at the, you know, what people consider the pearly gates. And he saw faces, he saw people and figures, but he couldn't make them out at first. And toward the end of the dream, he finally makes them out as he's realizing that this place might not be the place for him. It might not be where he's going. And he said that the people actually told him that. Like, as he started to recognize that there were black people behind the gates, he could also make out that they were, you know, basically like making it clear he was not coming in there. This wasn't where he was going. And he said, as he looked at all the faces, he realized that not one of the people looked like him. Not one. It was a very dark video. It was like, it was dark and it was light at the same time. Like, it was just like very, it got me in a place, you know, in a headspace. But then this Latino dude had a video similar. And he was talking about how he wanted to go save his kids because there was like some kind of alien invasion going on in his dream. And these ships were coming and they were parting the sky and people were getting zapped with these beams. And he was scared. Everybody was scared. They were running for their lives. And he starts running down the street. And he sees people lined up on the sides of the street. And as he's walking, running down, and they're telling him, you're going the wrong way. And he's like, I gotta go get my kids. And he said he noticed that a lot of the people who were telling him this, who were lined up along the street on either side, were white people, if not all of them. And I think he said that he saw, he got a glimpse of the aliens and realized that they did resemble black people. And he was astounded. And I don't remember much else of the dream, but I just don't understand how people can think that their ancestors are up somewhere smiling down on them and that God just overlooked how they treated black people. And then I don't understand how people nowadays think that they're going there. Like, do you really think you're going to heaven? And you treat people the way you treat people? And it's like people need to wake up sooner than later. Because one, life is not guaranteed. So you never know when you're going to go. And two, God knows if you just waited until you were 60 or 70 or 80 to work on certain issues you knew affected other people in this world after you got your fun time out the way and your life out the way. He also knows the people who devote their lives to helping people in need. It's just crazy to think that I'm out of school in 2023, and in just a couple months, a few months, I've been able to Well, a couple months for me, because I got here basically at the beginning of February. In just a couple of months, to be able to see how detrimentally destructive an institution for learning can be, and those within it, because of the systemic issues that I'm trying to solve and look forward to working to fix, but, you know, and prevent in the future. But it's some hard work, some really hard work. And all of these things that I've been going through, and this isn't everything, you know, I was poisoned twice by the cafeteria, even though I made it clear I'm allergic to dairy. I have a follow-up appointment about my allergic reaction after the first appointment I had last week, this week with the SLU clinicians. I was unable to eat comfortably over the spring break while I stayed here in the dorm because we closed the cafeteria for the whole of spring break, knowing that students would be here. So it's like, what were we supposed to do for food? You know? And of course, my food stamps went out as well at the same time. So I was waiting and waiting and waiting for basically the end of break, 2 days before the end of break, when I was supposed to get my food stamps, and come to find out they were just canceled or discontinued until I go back up there to reapply. So there's that. I've been racially discriminated against by Indian people working within the dining SLU industries or platforms. And the list goes on. It goes on. So, you know, I don't know exactly how we're going to fix these issues, but it needs to be done, because no one should have to go through what I'm going through just to get an education. The education should be the hardest part of it. The curriculum, learning, the knowledge, and retaining it. But the hardest part for students like me who are Black, and especially if they're Black and a few other things or something else, you know, the hardest part is the social life. And it's not just, oh, you don't have any friends, boo-hoo. It's, you have no friends. No one wants to talk to you. No one wants to sit next to you. People are talking shit about you, hazing you in passing, laughing at you because of your aesthetic and your appearance. And they're racist, you know, and they're trying to cover up their jealousy by, you know, talking shit about you. People are reporting you to superiors without even speaking with you because they don't see the need to treat you like a human being. Maybe they don't like a human being. Look, T.S. Madison said that in an episode the other day, and she is consistently telling me about these amazing shows that I need to look up, or movies and stuff. I've never seen Mars Attacks or whatever that movie is, but I'm definitely going to watch it. So that part was hilarious. And she knows a lot of other stuff, like The White Queen. Like, who knows about The White Queen? Like, really? You know, it's such an obscure show. But, like, she watches that type of shit. Salem. And the Medici Empire. Name and Bloodline. And their rule. You know. She's real cool. But, and I'm happy that she's finally getting her her kudos and her props. And her props for all the amazing work and education she's done throughout her life. Like, it's been a long time coming, and it's really too late. And it's really much later than it should have come. But all the more appreciated. I'm going to leave it here. I could go on for days about the things that I've experienced here on campus, but I think that does it for painting the picture of, you know, what Black students, especially Black students who are not just Black and fit into other minorities or marginalized communities, are going through at these universities and in school in general, at your elementary school, in your middle school. You know, you got the prison, you got the school to prison pipeline, and you've got these horrible, what aids in that, these horrible attitudes that people have that stem from their bigotry and their racism, and the discrimination that ensues against students who are literally just trying to get an education, just living, doing what they're supposed to do. You're demonized, devalued, and dehumanized. And so people, it makes it easy for people to dismiss what you have to say. You know? People dismiss me all the time. Some of them is just because I'm a Black woman. Others is because I'm transgender. Others is because of both. But whatever will be, will be. I'm Lynn Ferguson, also known as Lynn Tennyson, your host here on the show, Lynn's Pens. Join us next time we jump in.